It is the JR Sport Brief Show here on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you to everybody listening all over North America. Hope you had a great Thursday. I hope you're safe. I hope you're well. I hope you are all of the positive things. This show gets started every weekday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. I am in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm on a street called Peachtree in a studio above Peachtree. Thank you to our producer in New York City, Ryan Botcher. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we appreciate you for being here. You can always listen on the free Odyssey app. You can lock in on your local Infinity Sports Network affiliate. You got SiriusXM, it's channel 375. You got a smart speaker. Ask it to play the Infinity Sports Network. Okay? We've got into a lot. We talked a lot of basketball. Of course, the big news, not just in the sports space, but it's probably the biggest story in America today. Got Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier, head coach Damon Jones, or assistant coach Damon Jones. These guys are arrested for gambling this morning. NBA season just got underway. We talked about Victor Wembanyama having a historic performance last night. 40 points for the San Antonio Spurs over the Dallas Mavericks in Cooper Flagg's debut. He had 10 points, 10 rebounds. We talked about inside the NBA, moving over from TNT to ESPN. And we got so much more to get into. Of course, it's Thursday Night Football. We're going to talk about the Chargers and Vikings momentarily. In about 20 minutes, we're going to be joined by Julia Cruz, who covers, well, the Blue Jays for Sportsnet in Toronto. Yeah, the World Series starts tomorrow. All this gambling news going on. We'll have that chat with Julia. Next hour, we'll talk some more NBA with James Herbert. He'll join us from CBS Sports. Next hour, we got Amy Dash, Odyssey Sports legal analyst. She'll be here later on in the show. It's just been a busy, busy day. If you want to be a part of the show, you can. You can call up 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4ISN. For ISN. You can find me online. I exist everywhere at JR Sport Brief. What a day, what a day. I mean, these are the type of you never know what to expect. You don't. You know, I can draw a conclusion. It's not out of the world of possibility. By the time Monday comes around, I know we'll talk about Monday Night Football. We'll talk about some of the biggest games that took place over the weekend on Sunday. I know these things. At this point, next Thursday, we'll be talking about next week's Thursday Night Football matchup. There's just certain things that you could plug in. The World Series is going to be a talking point for us over the next week. But one thing you can never predict is news, breaking news. You can't do it. There's always going to be a story that pops up. Most of the time, it's unfortunate. And you got to shift things around. But amongst all of those things, yes, it is Thursday. And in Los Angeles, where I guess a bunch of Minnesota Viking fans are just going to take the opportunity to go on vacation, we're going to have the Vikings visiting the Chargers. Minnesota Vikings are currently 3-3. They've been out. Oh, this is going to be the fifth straight game, excuse me, without J.J. McCarthy. I mean, damn it, he missed all of last season with that meniscus injury. You hit the fast-forward button of this year, dealing with a high ankle sprain. And then you got the Chargers. Man, they're trying to stay alive, too. They've had all these injuries to their offensive line. Rashawn Slater. We might see Joe Alt today. He's no certainty. Man, they're kind of scuffling right now, too. We got a team like the Chargers. They started the season 3-0. They have fallen, if you want to fall, they have fallen to 4-3. It's not that easy. The Minnesota Vikings defense has been keeping them alive while Carson Wentz has been throwing interceptions. And, well, I mean, we could think about Justin Herbert. He's been able to stay alive behind that crap offensive line. Justin Herbert, on the season so far, 13 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. If he's going to do one thing, it's going to be to go out there and throw that rock. He knows his defense is going to come after him. Especially knowing that his offensive line is shaky. Justin Herbert says, man, I got to do what I got to do regardless.
They're going to bring a lot of pressure, and they've got a really good front seven, really good cover guys, and some really good linebackers too. They're really well coached, and I think we played against them a couple years ago, and a very tough opponent, so we have to be on our stuff. Quick week this week.
Yeah, they got a defensive coordinator, Brian Flores. I mean, when he's not suing the NFL for discrimination or telling Tua Tagovailoa that he sucks, I think he was actually right about that, by the way. Yeah, he's helping to lead one of the game's best defenses. Justin Herbert has to worry about the rush in front of him. He has to worry about one of the best defensive backs in the entire game. He's like, I got to worry about Harrison Smith, too.
He's been around for so long, and he's played at such a high level for 14 years. You know, he's a true pro, an incredible leader on that team, and someone that you definitely have to be aware of on the field.
Oh, yeah, snatched the ball right out of the air. That guy's a problem. And then you got the other quarterback on the other side. I mean, it's easy for me just to call him the other quarterback because he is. Carson Wentz is just holding down the fort until J.J. McCarthy comes back. And it really stinks that we're supposed to be able to see him this year. What is the name of the game in his career going to be that he's just injury prone? Come back sooner than later. Now, I get it. It is a short week. Okay, these Minnesota Vikings, they were just in action this past Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles bounced back to beat them 28-22. That was just a few days ago. And these Minnesota Vikings, they were not happy with the officiating. Carson Wentz went out there and threw two interceptions. He now has 5 touchdowns and 4 interceptions since taking over for J.J. McCarthy. And Carson Wentz, knowing that they just played on Sunday, here they are playing again on Thursday. Carson is just like, what are you going to do? You practice, you prepare, you try your best.
I don't think anybody goes from playing one game on Sunday to Thursday and actually feels good. It's just how good can you get yourself feeling, quite frankly. So feeling fine. You know, it's like I said, it is a grind to get there. Thankfully, it's a Thursday evening game, so you're using every minute you have to recover, to get yourself mentally and physically ready to roll.
All right, enough about that, Carson Wentz. Enough about that crap. You suck. How are you going to get better, man? Come on.
Handled it our best down there. You know, like I said, after the game, I thought we've done a pretty good job so far this year up until last game, and hats off to that defense for making it tough. But, yeah, it was nothing earth-shattering. Just, you know, some simple execution could have been better, made a difference in the game, and then the penalties that cost us.
Man, that was against the Eagles. Come on now, man. What can we expect against these Chargers? Let me be very clear. I see an L. That's it. I see a loss. Maybe the Minnesota Vikings defense is what keeps them alive in this game. But Carson Wentz is almost botched. Is he throwing one interception? He's throwing two today.
It might even be interceptions. How many interceptions plus fumbles, too? I just see a ton of turnovers. I see a pick and a fumble.
Damn, okay. You betting on that?
No. No betting right now with the news.
You going to get arrested? You illegally gambling?
I don't have the call. Carson hasn't said he's going to oil up his hands.
Okay, all right, we'll see what happens there. Yeah, I don't trust the... Well, who's supposed to trust the Vikings? Nobody trusts Carson Wentz. Nobody. There's a reason why this guy's been throwing around a football for, what, like 6 different teams over the past 6 years? There's a reason for that. The Chargers, if they're healthy, I believe in them. I told you about the 3-0 start. The record is now 4-3. It looks like the Kansas City Chiefs are making everybody get ready to just kind of eat their dust in the AFC West. Jim Harbaugh, who's always quite philosophical about everything, reminds us that training camp is like being born again, which he vividly remembers. I guess he's the only person who vividly remembers his birth. Jim Harbaugh asked if he still believes in his Chargers. Of course he does.
Do I have confidence in my team? Yes. Do I believe they're fighting? Yeah. And that's all you can really ask for as a coach, that they're giving it everything they have, no matter what the circumstances.
Oh, well, that was a pretty normal human being answer from Jim Harbaugh. Known to exaggerate and pontificate and just, I don't know, maybe you've been rocked a little bit too hard playing football growing up. That is certainly a possibility. This is a game of, why do we got to watch Carson Wentz? I wish J.J. McCarthy was out there playing. Maybe if it wasn't a short week, we would certainly get the opportunity. But Justin Herbert is one of my favorite QBs. He ain't nothing but a gunslinger. Sometimes I wish he would sling the damn ball to the right team. And, well, Kevin O'Connell, he's not bad. This guy's a quarterback whisperer. Do you see what he did with Sam Darnold last year? Kevin O'Connell, quite impressed with Justin Herbert.
Mobility in Justin's game is real. He can hurt you in the pocket with, you know, elite arm strength and accuracy. But then he can clearly make plays with his legs and create to give them extended opportunities at plays.
Yeah, this will be, I think this will be an interesting game. I believe this will be a fun game to watch simply because, well, I think both teams are flawed, right? You got the Chargers dealing with all these injuries to the offensive line. They got a couple of guys who might be back. Maybe we'll see Joe Alt. Khalil Mack, God bless him, he's going to be back in his second consecutive game after dealing with that ugly elbow issue about a month ago. They got other stars. Well, Keenan Allen connecting with Justin Herbert is always a fun connection. And then you got the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, Carson Wentz is going to throw that ball at Justin Jefferson. And then we even have, and this is a good news, or this is good news if you're a fan of the Minnesota Vikings, it appears that Aaron Jones is going to go out there and play after going on IR with that hamstring issue. So this is going to be an interesting game. I don't think it's just going to be because of any turnovers by Carson Wentz. I think two bad teams together. And Botcher, I don't know if this is a great analogy. You ever been to a museum and you saw the artwork kind of thrown together by somebody and you said, man, this looks like trash. But then somebody comes around and they go, you know what? This is a beautiful piece of art. You seen that before?
There's a lot of things I see in life and see why is that there. But especially museums, because sometimes it just looks like someone just threw paint on something, one or two. They might have just, you know, scribbled and called it a day.
And you say, I can do that at home. How is this art? I think what we're going to see tonight is going to be thrown together slop. But I think it's going to be so messy that you're going to appreciate it. You're going to take a look at it and go, oh, my God, what a piece of art. Like, it's one thing when you put a good football team on the field against a bad one and they just steamroll them. It's another thing when you put two bad teams on a football field together and you actually get a good game because it is going to be sloppy. It's going to look kind of messy, and you can appreciate all the action. Nobody wants to see a blowout. I mean, unless it's your team. If you're just in general watching a game, nobody wants to see a blowout. I don't think tonight will be a blowout. I think it'll be ugly all the way around. I think that the Chargers will win at home, even though, I don't know, what, 50% of the fans in the arena inside the stadium are probably going to be rooting for the Vikings. I'm going to go with the Chargers to get the victory. I think they're going to come out of this little malaise that they're in. I think they'll improve their record to 5-3, and the Minnesota Vikings will still be in reality. I think they're going to fall to 3-4, and they're just going to say, oh, my God, can we get J.J. McCarthy back? Because putting Carson Wentz out there to be our starting quarterback is a losing proposition. That's it. At least the Chargers, I think they'll stay competitive in the AFC West, especially as, well, the Kansas City Chiefs, we know about getting Rashee Rice back. He's back in the building, and he hauled in two touchdowns right away earlier this week. The AFC West, you got the Broncos, 5-2 after that comeback against the Giants. You got Kansas City, who just smoked the Las Vegas Raiders, what, 31-0. And then you got the Chargers out here who are just, I don't want to say, just being average. They expected to take a step forward, but you can't do that if everybody's hurt. I'm going to go ahead and take the Chargers. I think it's going to be a close game. Give them a touchdown. Botcher, what do you think about this game?
I honestly think that the Chargers, I know they're getting Joe Alt back and their defense is getting a little bit healthier. I just don't think the support around Herbert, and this is like an every year statement, is good enough. Quentin Johnson's been okay this year. You lose Hampton and Najee Harris to injuries. So I think it'll be a lot closer than people expect. But as you mentioned, the Carson Wentz effect is negative. So I think the Chargers will win, but it'll be a lot closer. Maybe a touchdown or in between field goal score range.
Yeah, Carson Wentz, I guess, for the Minnesota Vikings fans, he's like medicine, right? Like you don't want him. But in the meantime, you need them. It's unnecessary. Doesn't taste good. But maybe if you get through it, you'll feel better at the end. Carson Wentz is here in the meantime until J.J. McCarthy is ready to go following that ankle issue. Nobody wants to see Carson Wentz. The NFL doesn't want to see Carson Wentz on Amazon Prime. But let's put it this way. If he has a great performance, then he's going to get a pat on the back, and good for him. And I guess maybe Kevin O'Connell will have to look at things and just go, hey, do we keep on rolling with this guy? But at the same time, it is Carson Wentz. I highly doubt it. Everybody's waiting to see J.J. McCarthy come back. Come back and actually stay healthy, dude. You've been in the NFL 2 years. We've barely seen you. Okay. A year and change. It's the JR Sport Brief Show here with you coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Yes, we got Thursday Night Football. They're going to kick things off in about an hour from now. Minnesota Vikings and the Los Angeles Chargers. When we come back on the other side of the break, there's a team from Los Angeles, the Dodgers, you might have heard. They're going to be competing in the World Series again. They're going to try to go back-to-back, something that we haven't seen since the Yankees in the late 90s into 2000. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to have a conversation with Julia Cruz, who covers all things Blue Jays for Sportsnet in Toronto. We're going to get a Toronto perspective. We're going to get a Canadian perspective on what we can expect in the World Series that starts tomorrow. You're locked in. You're listening. It's the JR Sport Brief Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief.
It is the JR Sport Brief Show here with you coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Amongst everything going on in the world of sports, NBA investigations and arrests and Thursday Night Football, we do have Game 1 of the World Series taking place tomorrow in Toronto, Canada, as the Dodgers make their way north to take on the Toronto Blue Jays. Blue Jays haven't been in the spot since 1993. Of course, the Dodgers are trying to go back-to-back along with Shohei Ohtani and their crew and their payroll. They garner a lot of attention. But I wanted to get a different perspective. I wanted to talk with someone who covers these Jays, is very familiar with this team, how they got here, what we can expect. Joining us right now is Julia Kreutz, covers all things Blue Jays for Sportsnet in Toronto. Julia, how are you?
Doing all right. Happy to join. Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it. Like I said, a lot of people are very familiar with the Dodgers. They've been beat into the public conscious over the past decade or so. But we don't know as much about the Blue Jays. I do know about their talent. They've been battling it out with the Yankees and the American League East and the Orioles for the past several years. It's a very competitive division. What makes this season different for the Blue Jays where they've ascended to the World Series?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and one that these guys have been getting since May, probably, or June, when they found their offense and it looked like things were getting back on track for a team that won 74 games last season, right? The sort of the same cast of characters coming back. One thing that really stuck out to me, you know, when we have these conversations, when they won the American League East, these questions are obviously going to arise, and Bo Bichette's answer sort of stuck with me because he said something along the lines of, sometimes you just have to look in the mirror and figure out who you are. I think that that is kind of what we're seeing from these Blue Jays here. They figured out, they ironed out some details in the offseason when it comes to communication and preparation and how they are conveying messages on both sides of the ball, really, to hitters and to pitchers as well. Focused on the little things. This is a very, very sound defensive team. This is a team, they're not going to steal a ton of bases, but it's a very good base running team. And then the talent just started speaking for itself a little bit. In that, with that grew the chemistry. And now you're hearing quotes about this team playing for each other and being all in this together, playing as a unit, selfless baseball. All of the things that you want to hear out of a clubhouse were things that the Blue Jays were giving there, and they found their offense. I think that that is, you know, if you want to boil it down to one thing that has been the difference maker from last year to this year, is that they're hitting better. They were pretty close to the top of the league in OPS. They found their home run stride a little bit later in the season as well. And it's a team that doesn't strike out a whole lot. They grind out pitchers. They are going to foul off a bunch of pitches. Very much the little things team that starts with manager John Schneider, but it really trickles down to the entire roster here.
And Julia Kreutz is here with us, covers the Blue Jays for Sportsnet in Toronto. You talk about this offense, and one piece to the offense we have not seen because of that knee injury is Bo Bichette. And it looks like he might play, but he may be playing a different position than what we're used to. What's the latest on that, Julia?
Yeah, Ryan, that is a big question for the Blue Jays ahead of 10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow when they have to release their World Series rosters. Robichaud has not played in October yet. He's been out since September 6th with a knee injury that he suffered in a game against the Yankees. And pretty much every series up to this point, there has been this expectation of, is this the series we are going to see Bobichette back? But he was not able to run the bases before the last couple of days. Definitely not enough lateral movement to play shortstop. Now what we're seeing is videos of Bobichette not only running the bases, but taking ground balls at second, which is a position that he has never played in the major league since his minor league days. I think it was something like 30 games total in his professional career at second base. Listen, he says that he is going to be ready. He says that he wants to do whatever he can to help the team. That bat certainly lengthens the Blue Jays lineup. He is a very dangerous hitter. He would have led the league in hits were it not for the injury, probably would have led the league in doubles as well. So obviously this is a key piece that the Blue Jays will welcome back with open arms. The question remains, is he healthy enough to play and to contribute? Because even if Bobichet DHs, that opens another question mark around George Springer, who was also playing with a banged up knee in the past series and it has been mostly a designated hitter for the Blue Jays as well. So there are some questions there. I personally expect Bobichet to be active for the World Series. This is his chance to do this with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a guy that came up, the both of them together, really throughout the minor leagues here. They have this chance to do this together. Let's not forget that Bobichet is a free agent at the end of this season. So there's a lot on the line here. And if Bobichet is at 80-85%, Ryan, I do expect to see him on that World Series roster.
Well, Julia, one thing that we know for certain is that there are going to be a lot of folks who take a look at these Dodgers and expect them to beat the Jays. What are some elements where you feel that the Blue Jays are strong and that they don't necessarily have worry?
Yeah. I think it starts with just the soundness with which they play defense, which is, if you want to look back at last year's World Series, makes a difference when you are a fundamentally sound team and you're doing the little things right on defense. And the fact that this offense, obviously, we know how much swing and miss exists in the Dodgers' starting rotation and in the bullpen as well with certain arms there. But the Blue Jays being a high-contact team, leading the league in that department this season, being able to extend at bats and foul off pitches, and this is from 1 to 9, everyone is invested in that. They don't strike out not nearly as often as some other teams that they have seen in the playoffs so far. I think that is the biggest strength. If you're going to beat the Dodgers, you need to get these starters out of there and get to that bullpen, which is not as deep and has some clear flaws and clear limitations there. So this ability to extend it back, drive up the pitch count, and then get to the pen, I believe may be the difference maker for the Blue Jays offense, an offense that has led the postseason so far in OPS. And when you look at what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is doing, just the level of danger that exists on that bat, now all of a sudden you're adding Bobichet. Never count out George Springer in October. There are opportunities for some impactful moments and impactful innings offensively, but I believe it's going to come down to their ability to chase starters a little bit earlier in getting to that Dodgers bullpen.
Yeah, Julia Kreutz is here with us, covers the Blue Jays. It's the JR Sport Brief Show here on the Infinity Sports Network. Julia, you talk about the pitching. We all know about the Dodgers pitching and throwing out all the aces. They got a young, hopefully future ace in Sasaki helping them to close out games. And then you got the Blue Jays, whose rotation seems to be kind of stitched together. I mean, they're throwing a rookie out on the mound tomorrow. How confident are you in the Jays' rotation and bullpen to kind of help the offense out?
Yeah, Trey Savage, it's funny because he kind of came out of the blue, but at the same time, we had been watching him come up this entire season, right? Started the season in single A and just conquered level after level in the minors until he got to the Blue Jays rotation in September. And then all of a sudden, he's starting playoff games. He had one hiccup against the Mariners, and that was in game 2 of the ALCS. But otherwise, he has been spectacular, and it's pretty unbelievable that he's 22 years old with the way that he conducts himself and just the preparation. The pulse doesn't change in the big moments. Now he's starting a game one of the World Series. There's so much there that is storybook for this kid, and he's doing it. He's very effective. You want to talk about swing and miss, the high arm slot, the high release point, that fastball that, you know, has been described as it comes up from the sky, the splitter, the same thing. It's making hitters look foolish, and that's really, really impressive. And then you have Kevin Gausman, who has been just a workhorse for this team for the past few seasons now, and really found his stride late this season to emerge as that ace that the Blue Jays needed. Because you're right, I mean, there's the season was not without issues and without limitations for this rotation, but Gausman stepped up when they needed him the most, had pitched into the sixth inning every time he has started in this postseason, was credited with the win in game seven of the ALCS out of the bullpen. Max Scherzer, you know, you look at the 41-year-old looking for his third ring. We didn't know what we were going to get out of him in his start in the ALCS. He was brilliant as well. So, I agree with you, because you don't know if Scherzer can do it again. You don't know what version of Shane Bieber you're going to get, right? There was one very, very good start, and there was one iffy one in game seven. Really, really quick hook there for him as the Blue Jays tried to overcome the deficit against the Mariners. So there's a lot that remains to be seen here. I will say that when you look at the top of that rotation right now, I do have a lot of trust in Yesavage and Kevin Gausman. And from there, that is when the fun begins a little bit. And maybe that is where we'll see a guy like Chris Bassett, who is currently in the bullpen for the Blue Jays, play a factor. Eric Lauer, same thing. These starters that converted into the pen to help the Blue Jays in whatever way they can down the stretch here in the playoffs.
Yeah, Julia Kreutz is here with us from Sportsnet in Toronto. All things considered, we got seven games. We definitely won't have seven more games past this to end the season for Major League Baseball. What are you expecting? Do you think we're going to see the Jays with the Commissioner's Trophy?
Listen, I think that if the Blue Jays pull this off, they're going to have to be the fundamentally sound team that they have been all season long. I think that, you know, you look at vibes and you look at the cohesiveness of the group and how much the unity, that is all great. And I do think that that is part of what is going to help them be successful here, but they can't give the Dodgers extra outs. We know what this team does, how dangerous that lineup is. Three MVPs in a row, three potential Hall of Famers in a row for you to deal with there. They have to play their game. They have to be focused from the first pitch onward. And they have to grind out those starters and get them to leave the game a little bit early. It is not an easy task. Right? The Dodgers are favorites for a reason. They are the defending champions. The Blue Jays understand that. I'm not ready to go all the way and say that this is a David and Goliath type of thing, because the Blue Jays are also a pretty high payroll. They have some superstars of their own. They won 94 games this season. So there's a lot to like and to respect about what the Blue Jays have done, but they are underdogs, and there's a reason for that. I believe they're going to embrace it. And they're going to play with that in the back of their minds and in their back pockets. They're going to make the most of it, but they have to play their game. That is the only way that we're going to be talking about a Blue Jays World Series win potentially.
Well, Julia, I know everybody in Toronto is extremely excited. I love Toronto very much so, one of my favorite places on earth. What is the vibe like in the city? Have the Blue Jays kind of taken the entire city over? What's the vibe like?
Yeah, it's been really cool to watch the growth of that through the summer and now, because Toronto being such a multicultural city, there's people from all over. You see a ton of baseball hats, right? But they're not always Blue Jays hats, right? And what's starting to happen now, and Kevin Gausman pointed that out even in the last series, you know, the Yankees hats are starting to turn into Blue Jays hats. And I was driving to work the other day, happened to drive past a school here in my neighborhood. Apparently the school was just doing Blue Jays Day, so all the kids were wearing Blue Jays gear to school. when we leave the ballpark after covering a game, that's, you know, sometimes an hour, 90 minutes after the game is done, there are more and more people waiting outside the gate to, you know, catch a glimpse of a player, to show their support, things like that. And that's something that, talking to former players who were here for the playoff runs in 2015 and 2016, and even a little bit before that, that's something that they are quick to highlight as well, just how wholesome and full-hearted the support becomes when this team is good. And yeah, and this is it's a very likable squad. There are so many guys who, you know, fill those roles of it's the role player, but he is the glue guy, and everyone is just drawn to him, whether that is teammates or fans as well. So it's been really cool to see the evolution, to see the ballpark fill up over the summer. And these guys deserve it, right? They understand what they're playing for. They understand that it's the entirety of Canada that is behind them now, and they are playing for them as well. They don't take it lightly. So I agree with you. I mean, it's such a fun time in the city when the Blue Jays are playing well in the summer, and it really becomes just a united front to support this team.
Hey, I'm happy for the fans. I know everybody's going to enjoy it. It's going to be absolutely bananas there. Game one of the World Series, the Toronto Blue Jays hosting the Dodgers. Game one tomorrow. Julia, we appreciate the time. Tell everybody where they can follow you and all your work with Sportsnet.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm on Instagram, Julia Kreutz, that's spelled K-R-E-U-Z. Thank you so much for letting me plug this.
Absolutely. Thank you, Julia. We'll catch you on down the line, okay?
Appreciate it. Have a good one, guys.
You as well. Enjoy the series. Shout-outs to Julia Kreutz for joining us. Covers all things Blue Jays. You know, I think the Dodgers are going to take it. I think most people are choosing and picking the Dodgers to go and take it. But I want a competitive series, and I want the fans in Toronto to get a series worth watching as well. We'll keep you up to date, of course, with the series. We'll be live here on the air when they get started tomorrow with Game 1. It's the JR Sport Brief Show here with you coast-to-coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Hey, we're moving into that time where we got some sporting events and games that are already underway. We got some games that are going to get started, and we all know it's been a busy day in the world of sports. To get us up to speed on everything going on, joining us right now with a newsflash, here he is. It's Rich Ackerman.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief.
It is the JR Sport Brief Show here with you coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Thank you to Julia Kreutz for joining us to give us an update and a preview from Toronto about tomorrow's Game 1, about the entire World Series between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays. If you missed that conversation with Julia, go ahead and hit rewind on the free Odyssey app. I'm going ahead and picking the Dodgers to beat the Blue Jays. I'm hoping it's a competitive series. I said it a few days ago. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to get steamrolled. I think this is a series that may go to 6 games. I don't know about 7 games, but hey, if we get another 7 games in Toronto, go ahead and sign me up. Shout outs to Mr. Joe Carter. 888-710-4ISN is the number. That's 888-710-4ISN. You know, one of the key guys that she brought up when it came down to pitching for the Blue Jays is Max Scherzer. And we saw what he did in the last game. Five and I think a third, two-thirds innings pitched. Went out there, had a great game, keeping the Blue Jays alive. I don't think if he had that game, he was really the swing, I believe, for the series. I don't think he gets talked about enough. And Max Scherzer's 41 years old. He's dealt with a variety of injuries. He's one of these guys between him and Justin Verlander. It's like when they're done, they're done. I don't know what their lives are going to look like after baseball. And so they continue on. And that's from a quote unquote old guy, you know, with Max Scherzer. But then we got another guy. He's not even old. And this kind of just made me think of him last night with all the basketball news. Joel Embiid was back on a basketball court. We actually saw Joel Embiid. The Philadelphia 76ers were taking on the Celtics. Sixers came out on top, 117 to 116. Joel Embiid, listen to these horrific numbers. He's on a minutes restriction. Of course he is. Can't play. 20 minutes, 4 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. He was 1 of 9 from the field. He was 0 of 4 from deep. He couldn't run. He couldn't jump. He couldn't move. And yeah, Joel Embiid always complains about being criticized. But I guess if you're Joel Embiid, you feel like at this point, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And a big part of that is on him. Like, you have talked your way into this. You've not been in shape because of your issues. And I think not being in shape has factored into some of his injuries over the years. He was certainly much slimmer last night than what we've seen over years. But maybe it's too far gone that this MVP, who the Sixers are locked into, what, 2027, 2028, paying him, what, $60, $70 million a year? They just might be cooked. This is what Nick Nurse had to say about Joel Embiid and his return.
Well, I'm super happy he was out there. I think that he played good. I know that's going to sound silly. I 1 for 9. He just didn't shoot it very good. I thought he transferred the ball good. I thought he made some good decisions. I thought he took good shots. I thought he protected the rim. So again, that's like, he hasn't done much, right? He's kind of played a scrimmage and a preseason game. And I think there's some rust there, but I thought he was moving good and made good decisions, which is really positive.
Thought he was moving good. Oh, I don't know about that one. This man may never move the way that he's moved in the past before. Them days might be over. And I guess if you want to find a bright side for the 76ers, it's that Maxey had 40 points. He's going to continue to elevate his game. We know he's one of the best guards in the game. But then VJ Edgecombe, you know, making his debut as a rookie, 34 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. He was shot out of a cannon to start the game, was 5 of 13 from deep. And he just ended up setting a franchise record for a rookie in their 76ers debut. And so it's like on two hands that the 76ers are running in parallel directions. They got all these exciting young guards. You put McCain in there as well. And then you put Paul George and Joel Embiid on the opposite end. And you just go, how the hell are you going to move forward with these two old-ass anchors on the other side of the bench, on the other side of the team? 76ers are going in two different directions. And speaking of injuries, I don't know if this is sucking up to the fans, and it's just kind of wild last night. Karl Anthony Towns said a few days ago that he's been dealing with a hamstring strain, and he was doubtful. And then before the game, it was like, oh, he's not going to play. And then before the game, it's like, oh, he's thinking about playing. And he did play. Last night, the Knicks, they went out there, and they won. Okay, the New York Knicks did win, and they did it with Karl Anthony Towns on the basketball court, which was kind of surprising. They beat the Cavaliers 119 to 111. Karl Anthony Towns, 19 points, 11 rebounds, with a quadricep strain. How? He told everybody he just wanted to go out there and play for the fans? What? This is what he said.
I've been banged up and haven't really got a chance to practice or play those last two preseason games. But you know, I don't want to disappoint the fans. You know, dealing with a grade 2 quad strain, you know, it's not something that's easy to deal with. But you know, we made it happen tonight. I'm glad the fans respected the effort I put into play tonight, and my teammates really did too. So shout out to them, you know, supporting me and understanding the situation.
Are you really that damn hurt if you just going to go play through it in game one? Like, what are we doing? Like, one of his teammates, Mitchell Robinson, did not play yesterday in game one of the regular season because of load management. What is he load managing? His entire career? The fact that he's been hurt and he's fragile and feeble? Is he managing the load that he had over the offseason? There was no basketball. And so this is why the New York Knicks are just absolutely hilarious to me. Because you can have one player who's healthy enough to play, but they're trying to manage his workload because he has an injury history. And then you have your second best player, a star player, an all-star, in Karl Anthony Towns, who's dealing with a quad strain and decided that he was still going to go out there and play because he didn't want to disappoint the fans. And so what would have happened yesterday if he just, I don't know, pulled his quad and damaged it some more? You like the Nets. Don't you find this comical?
I start to question, is he lying about the grade 2 quad strain? Maybe it was grade 2 a couple weeks ago. But physically speaking, like grade 1's a small, like, rest a few days. Grade 2 is like a week or two or 3 weeks. There's no shot if this is a recent injury. He's good enough to run at full speed and play as a starter in game one. And so if he's lying about this, okay. If they try to hide it, cool. But just don't try to say that you did it. You pushed through it to play for the fans when you physically probably could have gotten through it yourself.
Oh, what do you think? This is a pro. Well, he also was very vocal a couple of days ago saying he doesn't understand his role in the New York Knicks offense under Mike Brown. Do you believe this was or maybe a little bit of a protest to him?
No, this definitely wasn't. I just feel that he maybe medically was not fully comfortable with what he's going to do yet and didn't know. And then he was fully cleared to play yesterday or like I'd say 75% sure. And he said, well, you know what? Let's play. If it goes wrong, it goes wrong. And I don't know why he would do that.
The fact that there's so many voices in the New York Knicks that all come out, there's just no consistency. Like you got Mike Brown, who, and it all comes from the top. What a shock. It comes from Dolan. Dolan speaks to the press when he wants to annihilate somebody or start a fight. The GM and president don't talk. The coach has to speak and speak up on behalf of management, which is not his job. And then you got the players who just say whatever the hell they want. The New York Knicks are a joke. It's the JR Sport Brief Show here with you coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Speaking of a joke, we come back. Aaron Rodgers. He's going to take on his former team, the Packers. It's going to be Sunday Night Football. Is that going to be a joke? Is Rodgers looking forward to it? Is it a revenge game? We'll get into it on the other side. The JR Sport Brief Show, the Infinity Sports Network.